Hello and welcome to the Deathcast. I'm your host, best-selling author Ian Tott, and I'd like to thank you for joining me as we're prepared to take another look at the world of true crime. Now, before we get going, I have a couple of show notes, as always. If you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple ways you can do that. First, you can go to CorpseCreekPublishing.com. That is the official website for the show. There's a donate button on there. You can click on that. If you are so inclined, buy me a cup of coffee or a pack of smokes, or just let me know you think I'm doing a good job. You can also go to your favorite podcast website, click on the subscribe or follow button, and leave a 5-star review. Believe it or not, they really do help with the getting the show out there to more people. If you would like to follow me on social media, just search for Ian Totten, author, The Deathcast, or Corpse Creek Publishing. You can find me on most social media platforms underneath one of those handles. And lastly, I'd like to wish everyone a happy new year. It is 2023 when you are hearing this. And it is the third year that I am doing this show. And I would personally like to thank everyone who has followed the show over the last 3 years and helped it grow. Started out getting maybe 3 or 4 downloads a show, and quite a bit above that now, and I can't tell you how much I really appreciate it. And also, the show sounds different this episode. It's because I finally retired my old microphone. I brought a new one. It's a little bit different than the one I'm used to, so I'm still figuring out all of the various doodads with it. It's a tabletop model as opposed to my old model, which actually had an arm that I could move it around to different points while I was recording. So we're going to see how this one goes. All right, now that everything is out of the way, get yourself something to drink, find a nice comfy chair, kick back, relax. I've got my coffee, I've got my cigarettes. Let's go into the crypt. So we're starting off this new year with a little bit different of a case, and that is because this one has been requested specifically by a longtime listener and supporter of the show by the name of Kenny. This week, the first episode of 2023, we are going to be covering the murder of the bass player for the band Mayhem, known as Euronymous. He was born, and you'll have to forgive me, I'm English speaking. I'm not Norwegian in any way, shape, or form. His birth name was Øystein Areseth. This is a case that I have known about for decades at this point, as Mayhem was a early influence on my own musical input. I used to sing, play guitar, drums, bass, you name it, I did it in a band called Thesis Oblivion, which was a black metal, horror metal band that I created with a couple of friends of mine back in the early 2000s, and which, while still somewhat active here and there, is mostly been out of circulation since 2014. So I really got into looking into the band Mayhem, as they were quite different from many other bands that preceded them. For those who don't know what black metal is, black metal mostly focuses on lyrics aimed at extolling the virtues of Satanism, for want of any better terms. Now, earlier bands who had flown the black metal banner, such as Bathory and Venom, their view on the topic of Satanism really was more in line with horror movies. It was shock metal, but it was played much louder, with much more distortion than most metal that had come before it. Venom coined the term black metal with the naming of their second album. Really, Bathory, which was a Scandinavian band, gave black metal its sound. For those of you who follow that genre of music, you know what I'm talking about. The tremolo picking played at high speeds, the double bass pedals, and the shrieking, growled vocals. Mayhem, on the other hand, they took it to another level in that they attempted to practice what they preached, so to speak. They attempted to live what it was that they were doing. As you're going to see as we get further into this story, there was none of the comic undertones that were visible in Venom's music, where, I mean, Henry Rollins called Venom the living embodiment of Spinal Tap. And that is because everything they did was on an extremely limited budget and as over-the-top as they could possibly make it. One of the things that Venom was known for was having giant wind machines blowing while they were on stage so that the band members' hair would constantly be blowing as they played because they thought it looked cool. Clad in leather, that kind of thing. Again, they were progenitors of the genre. They created some things on their own, such as the lyrical content and the heaviness of it, but they also had to borrow from what came beforehand as far as the motorcycles, the leather, that type of thing. Mayhem was different from the bands that had come before them in that Mayhem did everything in their power to really extol this dark, mysterious, evil image. Yet most people are familiar with the band Kiss, who wore face paint back during the 1970s, only to abandon it in the 1980s. Well, Mayhem is, if not the first, one of the first to take that idea and strip away the various covers, instead going for a more morbid look, which came to be known as corpse paint. It was faces painted white with some black around the eyes or on the lips, in an effort to make the band members look quote-unquote evil. Now, Euronymous, again, who was born Øystein Areseth, was born on March 22nd, 1968, in Surnadal, Norway. The area that he was born in is known for agriculture, forestry, and industrial production. Like many of his contemporaries, Euronymous got into music at a fairly early age, and it was when he found bands like Kiss and Judas Priest and Black Sabbath that he started forming the idea that he wanted to be in a band. Then other bands came along, again, most notably Venom, Bathory, and Hellhammer, who later went on to become the band Celtic Frost. And these bands had an extremely profound effect on the young Euronymous and other individuals that he was encountering at that time. The music scene, and music in general in Norway at this point that we're talking about, which is the early 1980s, was much different than it is now. And it was extremely different from how it was in most of Europe, in that these kids didn't have a whole lot of money. It was very difficult for them to get records and tapes of the bands that they enjoyed, so that when they did get their hands on new music, they would share it around with each other, make mixtapes, that kind of thing, loan out tapes in exchange for a tape from somebody else who got something that, you know, they liked. And because of all this, you had this really kind of tight-knit community of tape-trading musicians that started to appear in the area of Norway from which Orstein was from, which was located really on Norway's northwestern side of the country, kind of along the coastline. Now, initially, the band that would go on to become Mayhem formed in 1984. Contrary to popular belief, the band was not initially known as Mayhem. It was instead performing under the name of Checker Patrol. If I remember correctly, they were really more of a thrash metal band than they were a black metal band during this period of their history. Before I go any further, I'm going to state, other than a few key characters in this story, I'm going to be referring to most of the individuals that you're going to be hearing about under their stage names, and that is simply because trying to pronounce their Norwegian and Swedish and other Scandinavian names will take me hours, as if you look up these guys and read their names, you'll be scratching your head in an attempt to try and understand how to pronounce them. During this initial formative period of the band's name, Euronymous went by the name of Destructor. Although after a few years or possibly even a few months, the history is vague on this particular aspect of it, he ended up changing it to Euronymous, which he derived from the demon Euronymous, who most famously to modern individuals mentioned in Anton LaVey's The Satanic Bible. And that's something to pay attention to with this story. Although eventually the Satanic Bible would be outlawed in Norway, initially it was not. And these kids, because that's what they really were, really got into Satanism in the theistic sense of the word. That is to say, they believed in Satan as a deity, much as Christians believe in God and Jesus Christ, and the Romans believed in their pantheon. They believed in a physical deity of Satan. The initial lineup of the band, or at least one of them, consisted of Euronymous playing guitars, Jorn Stubberud, who became known as Necro Butcher on bass and occasional vocals, Ketil Manheim on drums and piano, and a rotating cast of characters as vocalists and or guitarists. Now, eventually, they would record a demo under the name of Checker Patrol before changing their name to Mayhem, which has been said to have been taken from the Venom song Mayhem Without Mercy. During this period of time, Euronymous was really pushing for the band to get heavier and darker. And they eventually recorded a demo called Pure Fucking Armageddon, which is more in line with what Mayhem would become in the ensuing years. 1986-87 saw more lineup changes for the band as they introduced a man by the name of Hellhammer, who is my personal favorite drummer of all time. He is exceptionally gifted in terms of technicality and speed, so much so that despite the fact that he mostly performs in the black and extreme metal genres, he has won what the equivalent of Norwegian Grammy Awards for his playing. I mean, he really is amazing. So he comes into the group, and at this point, really, the core members are Necro Butcher, Euronymous, and then Hellhammer, and they have two vocalists that float in and out of the group, one of whom is named Messiah, the other is an individual by the name of Sven Erik Christensen, who would go on to be christened Maniac, and with this lineup, they record another demo known as Death Crush, which was released on a record label that Euronymous had founded called Poser Corpse Records, which would later become Death Like Silence Records. This was really the first recording by a band of this genre that got any notice. Mayhem really started to present this nihilistic worldview in both lyrical content and musical style. There was nothing flashy about their music at this stage. It was just straightforward, brutal, with indecipherable lyrics delivered in a high, screeching scream that was really indecipherable. The initial pressing of Death Crush sold out fairly quickly, although this lineup that had made the album would not last, as the vocalists would leave fairly quickly afterwards. Because of the notoriety that they were bringing to themselves, both because of their music and the fact that Euronymous was giving a lot of dark-themed, misanthropic statements to the underground metal press in Europe, Mayhem really started to gain a cult following throughout this part of the world. Some people in other areas of the world, such as the United States, started hearing rumblings about them, but it wasn't like, it was with bands like Judas Priest or even Venom, who actually were able to come over to the States and do tours. Mayhem was still really largely confined to the Scandinavian countries. And just as Mayhem and the individuals in that band had been inspired by groups that came before them, they too began to inspire groups within their area, which led to Euronymous starting to build this network of musicians that kind of circled around Mayhem for the next few years. Now, if you look into Mayhem yourself, you may see some things stating that the black metal scene in Norway and Germany and Sweden really wasn't kicking off at this period of time. However, I've been studying and reading up on this stuff for years. It really was towards the later part of the 80s that this began to happen. And a big reason for this was not only the fact that Euronymous had started this record label, but after the release of the Death Crush EP, they got a new infusion of blood in the form of a new lead singer by the name of Per Yngve Olin, who would go on to infamy under the stage name Dead. Dead was born January 16th of 1969. Quick little background on him. He was born in Sweden, and it's been reported that he came from a broken home and suffered from sleep apnea as a child. There are two different versions of what happened during his youth. Both of these are actually fairly important. Which one you choose to decide is the real version is up to you. But at the age of 10, he began to experience internal bleeding. Dead told people that this was due to the fact that he had suffered an ice skating accident, while his brother, years later, that Dead had actually been bullied at school, and one day he received a beating that was so horrific it actually caused his spleen to rupture. Dead was rushed to the hospital, where he was clinically declared dead for a short period of time. And this resulted in him becoming fascinated by death. This is something that's fairly common in individuals when they suffer a near-death experience, particularly when they're younger. This is important in trying to get an understanding of who Dead was and what was to come in his life. It's more likely than not that because of his experience, Dead ended up becoming extremely depressed, clinically depressed, as well as suffering from some form of anxiety and OCD. Now, this is information I pulled from a couple of different studies done on the subject, which basically state that individuals who are focused or hyper-focused on the idea of death and even on the idea of dying suffer from, you know, chronic depression, OCD, anxiety. But at the time that it happened, the world wasn't what it was now, where an individual, especially a child, may be referred to counselors in order to help them work through this. In any event, Dead ended up, much like the other members of Mayhem, falling in love with hard rock and heavy metal music. Sometime in 1986, he formed a Swedish thrash slash death metal band called Morbid. They ended up recording a demo called December Moon, as well as another demo. Eventually, Dead would leave Morbid as, in his own words, the band was quote-unquote going nowhere. And around the time that he left Morbid, it just so happened that Mayhem was looking for a lead singer. This would be in 1988. And according to NecroButcher, he received a package in the mail containing a demo tape, a letter detailing who he was and his ideas, along with a crucified mouse. Whether or not this is just NecroButcher's way of trying to hype up the legacy of Dead is left to interpretation. He was a very strange individual, and I tend to believe NecroButcher more so than other members of the band. You'll understand why shortly when we get into what happens with Dead. In any event, they ended up listening to the demo and deciding that Dead was a perfect fit for their band. It was at this point that Dead was offered the vocalist position and actually moved to Norway. And it was instantaneous that all the members of the band just gelled. Again, remember, Dead was a very strange individual. He used to tell people that he, in fact, thought that he was dead. This was very likely an extension of the mania he was experiencing from his near-death experience. But it went further than that. He would tell people that he could actually feel the blood coursing through his veins, and at times it actually felt like it was turning to ice. For live performances did, much as Euronymous was doing, took to wearing corpse paint. He also took it a step further with Hellhammer, who, if you'll remember, was the drummer, stating before the shows, Dead used to bury his clothes into the ground so that they could start to rot and get that grave scent. He was a corpse on stage. Once he even asked us to bury him in the ground, he wanted his skin to become pale. Dead was beyond the point of no return, in my opinion. By the time he joined Mayhem, members of the band have described how he began collecting the rotting corpses of animals that he would find, and oftentimes carry them around in plastic bags so that he could quote-unquote take sniffs of them while he was up on stage so that he again could quote-unquote sing with the stench of death in his nostrils. One of Dead's influences is that Mayhem began purchasing the severed heads of pigs and bringing them with them live onto stage, where they would put them onto basically a spear set into the stage, and during various points during the show, Dead would stab the head with a knife, or they would take it off and throw it into the crowd, claiming later that they did this in order to get the quote-unquote posers to leave the concert. In reality, my personal belief is that this was done in order to show that they were really, you know, the most extreme band that there was, and generate buzz for themselves. Because other than locally produced fanzines in that region of the world, and some fanzines in the United States, nobody was paying attention to Mayhem or this kind of music. We can look back on the things that happened now and see what it really was a bunch of really depressed kids who really liked music and were looking for a way to express themselves. Unfortunately, though, when it comes to Mayhem, especially during the first decade or so of their existence, this depression and anger and teenaged angst, as you can already guess, is going to lead to bad places. So, while all of this is going on with Mayhem, another central character to our story, I'm going to bring him in at this point, and that is an individual who was born Christian Vikernes, and who has legally changed his name to Louis Cachette. He is better known to heavy metal fans, particularly black metal fans, under the pseudonym Varg Vikernes. Varg was born February 11th, 1973, in Bergen, Norway. Like the other members of this burgeoning black metal scene, Varg very quickly fell in love with, you know, heavy music at a young age, as well as J.R. Tolkien and role-playing games. But before all of that, there are some things we need to discuss that shaped who Varg would become, much as my series on the Oklahoma City bombing. I'm warning you now, if discussions of race upset or bother you, you may want to fast forward ahead a few minutes, because Varg is one of those individuals who sees a distinction between the races, and he has no problem letting everyone know about it. According to Varg, when he was 6 years old, the family moved to Iraq for a year because his father was working for Saddam Hussein on developing a computer program. Because of this, Varg had to enter the Iraqi school system. naturally, there were no English-speaking schools in Iraq, nor were there any Norwegian-speaking schools, so he ended up going into the regular school system, and according to Varg, because of this, it was the first time he realized that there were racial differences. According to his own account, he eventually ended up having a fight with a teacher whom he called a racial slur, although the teachers didn't hit him, quote-unquote, because I was white. There may be some truth to that. Really don't know. Although, Varg's mother would state in interviews that she has given that other students would get slapped by the teachers. Varg did not get hit by them. Apparently, this caused problems in the school, which I imagine it would, as I'm certain the other students saw him as being favored, which leads me to believe that there's a very good chance that Varg ended up getting bullied by the other students. Again, this is coming from Varg himself. Eventually, he got a swastika flag somehow, and according to him, his father was angry about the fact that his son had a Nazi flag because he feared his son was going to become a Nazi. Well, at the same time, his father took extreme issue with individuals who looked different than them, i.e. people who were different colored. Whether this is true or not, I honestly don't know. It sounds to me like he may be trying to find some reason in his early childhood why he has the racial ideologies that he carries. He even goes so far as to state that his mother was, quote-unquote, very race-conscious because she feared he was, quote-unquote, going to come home with a black girl. At some point after they returned to Bergen, Varg's parents ended up getting divorced, and from all that I could find, his mother really raised him on her own from that point forward. This was around 1985 when he was about 11 years old. So now we're into that period of time where Varg starts finding different musical genres. He was a fan of classical music before moving on to heavy metal. He has stated in numerous interviews that the biggest influence on him initially was Iron Maiden, although he eventually moved on to heavier acts such as Sodom, Creator, Bathory, Megadeth, Slayer, bands of those veins. Varg began playing guitar around the age of 14, joining a band called Urak Hai, which for the Tolkien fans out there, you'll recognize that as a reference to the Lord of the Rings. Eventually, he went on to join the band Old Funeral. This was around 1988. We recorded some demos with them. I would imagine that it was around this period of time that he started to come into contact with the members of Mayhem, particularly Euronymous, who was really going out of his way to not only make a name for himself, but also for his band. And give you an idea of how Euronymous was going about doing this. This is a quote from the book Lords of Chaos, which is really the seminal book written on this subject, although I will warn you if you go out to find it, there are a lot of inaccuracies as well as hyperbole in there in an attempt to make the individuals involved seem badder and tougher than they actually were. Quote, he was always dressed in black from head to foot, his hair dyed black for added effect. He sported long, aristocratic mustaches and wore knee-high boots. His black leather biker jacket was decorated with badges. When talking, he seemed stern and serious, sometimes with pomposity verging on the theatrical. to young impressionable youth in the area, he was a magnetic personality who did everything in his power to affect an air of authority over them. While spewing his jargon, he claimed in various interviews to be against individualism, compassion, peace, happiness, or fun, instead claiming to embrace a misanthropic lifestyle where he would spread hatred, sorrow, and evil. Again, I honestly believe that most of this was done for effect in an effort to make himself seem bigger than he actually was, much as the majority of the individuals in that genre did back then and continued to do to this day. They're putting on airs and characters similar in vain to how a professional wrestler works people by creating a gimmick and staying in it 24/7, or at least how they used to do it. An example of that would be in Ric Flair or a Harley Race, where they were out in public, their personality was amplified X amount of times in order to get the desired effect from those around them. I honestly believe that Euronymous was of a similar nature. He was trying to shock and upset people because he was getting a reaction from them. And in doing so, he was pulling other musicians into his sphere. Moving into the early 1990s, the band began to write new music for what was ostensibly their first full-length record, which would be known as De Mysterious Dom Satanis, with songs being performed at live shows that would be recorded and later be released through various means, some as bootlegs, some as unofficial recordings from the band themselves. And one thing to take note of at this point is that Euronymous was really pushing this dark and evil theocratic Satanism, not only in their music, but also to those around him. Also of note at this point is that Dead, who had been known already to injure himself during live performances, taking knives and cutting himself while on stage, this became more pronounced during their stage shows. But his self-harm did not contain itself to the stage. Eventually, he began doing this casually while in front of other people, and it's been said that there was a noticeable deterioration in Dead's mental faculties, and it got to the point that he would start cutting himself and other members of the band and his friends within the scene would have to physically restrain him to keep him from cutting himself. While Euronymous is said to have kind of fostered this, really pushed Dead to continue doing this type of thing because in his mind he felt that it fit with the morbid, evil imagery that he was trying to project for the band. A member of the scene was quoted as saying well after the fact, quote, "I don't know if Osteen did it out of pure evil or if he was just fooling around," unquote. My personal opinion is that Euronymous egged him on, not realizing the seriousness of the situation. And because he was so wrapped up in this aura that he had built up around himself by this point, he believed that it was expected of him to act in that way, as opposed to doing what any normal sane individual would do, which is to stop their friend from committing self-harm and then going and getting them help of some type. In any event, by 1991, Euronymous Dead and Hellhammer had all moved into a house near Krakstad, which they planned on using as a place of rehearsal. And it's been said that during this period of time, Dead's already weakened mental state got worse as there was constant infighting amongst the three men living in the house, with Euronymous supposedly egging Dead on whenever he would do some act of self-harm. Hellhammer later said in interviews that Dead pretty much withdrew from the rest of them, spending much of his free time writing letters and drawing. While other members of the band have recounted stories of Euronymous going out of his way to annoy Dead, such as in one instance where Dead was forced to flee the house in the middle of the night because Euronymous was intentionally playing music that he knew that his friend didn't like, and upon learning that his friend had gone outside to sleep, went outside and began shooting a shotgun into the air in an effort to further antagonize him. At this period in time that we're talking about, 1991, Varg Valkyries had already joined the circle, as it were, and was in the process of creating his own one-man band called Burzum. Burzum was extreme black metal. In order to fully immerse himself within this, Varg took on the persona of Count Grishnak, which is a name that he lifted from Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. Now, I'm going to give another warning at this point, because we are about to cover something fairly gruesome, which has only led to further mayhem's controversial legacy. On April 8th of 1991, so the story goes, both Hellhammer and Euronymous left the house, leaving Dead alone inside for this next part, because there's so many different stories that have been put out there concerning what happened. I'm going to go with Hellhammer's version because it's the most concise and really gives you a bit of an overview of what was going on inside that house and within the band. I'm going to be quoting here from an article which was conducted by Dmitry Basik in June of 1998. Quote, "In the beginning of the 90s, we rented an old deserted house in the forest. We needed a place for rehearsals, so we ended up in that house. It would take 20 minutes to get to the nearest shop, and we had to go by train to the nearest town." He then goes on to give the atypical black metal response about how it became a house of ill repute, and women and children would hustle on their way past the house. Further, he states, quote, "Euronymous was busy with his label and spent all the days typing something. I played drums, and Dead would lock himself in his room, permanently depressed. So that was the way we lived. Each of us was in his own world. Euronymous and Dead didn't get along well. Dead didn't trust Euronymous. The verbal fights turned real bloody beatings. I got tired of their quarrels and moved to my grandmother's, coming back merely to rehearse. One day I decided to go to Oslo with my friends. Before the departure, I met Dead. He was grim and depressed. Look, I bought a big knife. It's very sharp. Those were the last words I heard from him. Euronymous was leaving with me that day. He went to town on his label's business. Some days later, when Euronymous came back, the house looked deserted. The front door was locked, and there was no key in our secret place. Euronymous ran around their house and noticed that the window to Dead's room was open. He got into the house and saw Dead lying on the floor. A part of his head was blown away by the gunshot. Euronymous hitchhiked a car to the nearest town to buy a film for the camera. Then he returned and made a shot of Dead's corpse. I was surprised at having noticed that the knife laid on the gun. It should lay under it. Maybe Euronymous never went to town that day. And that piece right there, he's intimating that possibly this was not a suicide, and possibly that he and Dead had gotten into things so heatedly that Euronymous may in fact have murdered Dead. However, evidence points to the contrary. Further on, I'm quoting, "When Euronymous called me, he was not talkative. Dead went back home," he said. "Back to Sweden, I wonder? No, he's blown his head." Then I realized that Dead was dead. Police took Dead's body, but we would live in the house for a few more weeks. Dead's blood and pieces of skull were all over the room. Once I looked under his bed and found two big pieces of skull. I took one piece and Euronymous took the other. We made amulets out of them. That last little bit there has really been proven to have been a story cooked up by the band in order to reaffirm their evilness. What actually happened is that Dead, left to his own devices, took a knife and cut his own throat before cutting his wrists, and eventually he took a shotgun and shot himself in the head with it. Euronymous returned to the house and found this apparently a few days later. The timeline of this has always been kind of choppy, but it really is a pivotal point in the life of Euronymous, as well as the band that he founded and was leading. So Euronymous comes back, and as the story goes, he rearranged some things in the room before going and getting a camera and taking pictures of Dead. Afterwards, he did take a few small pieces of skull, which he gave to his most trusted friends for whatever reasons it was he had. Most likely, he was trying to prove that he was really dark and evil. And he put it out there through the Metal Underground that he may have taken pieces of Dead's brain and cooked and ate them. This is absolute nonsense. He did contact the other members of the band, and as a unit, Mayhem put on this hard, dark, and evil front. And I really think it's telling that years later, Necrobutcher, the bass player, would finally break ranks and give a much truer view of what was going on at that point. So I'm going to quote a couple clips from Necrobutcher discussing Dead's suicide, and I really think it gives you a window into the guys behind the facade of dark and evil, and also gives you a glimpse into the character of Necrobutcher himself, and shows why things eventually played out the way they did. According to Necrobutcher, and this is a quote, "Oystein called me up the next day and says, 'Dead has done something really cool. He killed himself.' I thought, 'Have you lost it? What do you mean, cool?' He says, 'Relax, I have photos of everything.' I was in shock and grief. He was just thinking how to exploit it. So I told him, 'Okay, don't even fucking call me before you destroy those pictures.'" At this point, Necrobutcher leaves the band. Although, at the time, if I recall correctly, his reasons for leaving were not given. This did, however, create quite a big rift between Euronymous and his actual friends, because they realized too little and too late the severity of what it was that Dead was dealing with, And looking back on things, they found themselves disgusted with Euronymous's behavior towards Dead, as well as how he treated Dead's suicide. Which is a normal reaction from people, which, again, goes against the grain of this dark and evil mythos that Euronymous was doing his best to sell around the band. A lot of them saw Euronymous for what he was, which was an exploitive SOB, because he very quickly turned around and used Dead's suicide as an effort to forward his own desires and aspirations by letting it be known that Dead had killed himself because he quote-unquote believed black metal had become trendy and too commercialized. And again, to show this rift that really developed between Euronymous and his friends, at least according to Necro Butcher, he was so upset and disgusted by Euronymous's actions that he honestly thought about killing the man. One other takeaway from Dead's suicide, and I believe it was Necro Butcher who actually made this statement, again, years after the fact, was that he believed Euronymous acted the way that he did in regards to Dead killing himself, almost as it was a defense mechanism, because he did not have any other way to deal with, that is, internalize and come to grips with the fact that a friend of his had just killed himself in the house that he was living with. And so, as opposed to doing, you know, what a normal person may do, which is go to talk to somebody about it, talk with your friends who have been going through this trauma with you about it, he kind of lashed out afterwards, putting out all of these things, doing the things he did, including taking pictures of Dead's body and pieces of the skull, in an effort to try and come to grips with this. There may be some truth to that, although, obviously, since this episode is about the death of Euronymous, we will never know the truth to that. This part of their story would not be complete, and I know I will get some pushback if I don't read Dead's suicide note. Excuse the blood, but I have slit my wrists and neck. It was the intention that I would die in the woods so that it would take a few days before I was possibly found. I belong in the woods and have always done so. No one will understand the reason for this ever. Anyway, to give some semblance of an explanation, I am not a human. This is just a dream, and soon I will wake up. It was too cold and the blood kept clotting. Plus, the new knife is too dull. If I don't succeed dying to the knife, I will blow all the shit out of my skull. Yet I do not know. I left all my lyrics by Let the Good Times Roll. Plus the rest of the money. Whoever find it gets the fucking thing. As a last salutation, may I present Life Eternal. Do whatever you want with it. Pele. I didn't come up with this now, but 17 years ago. Life Eternal, for those curious, is a song that I believe Mayhem eventually did record. Not long after Dead committed suicide, right around May of 1991, Euronymous would actually open up a record store, which would also be the headquarters of his record label, which by this point, or it might have been not long after this, maybe a year or two, had changed its name from Poser Corpse to Death Like Silence Productions. Anyways, the record shop became kind of infamous. It was named Helvet, which is the Norwegian word for hell. And the reason it became kind of infamous is because there wasn't just dead suicide the previous month. Out of this record shop and the group of individuals who are going to start hanging out there came what has been termed by the press as the Black Circle or the Black Metal Inner Circle. Again, you've got to remember, these guys were heavily into stuff like D&D. Don't believe the things they say now about that. They were all into that kind of stuff, so to them, to have this, you know, secret group that they called the Black Circle was a big deal. And basically, they would get together at this record shop and discuss the music scene, different bands, and also, you know, try and outdo one another for how evil they were and how much they hated Christianity. To quote Daniel Ekeroth in 2008, within just a few months of Helvet opening, many young musicians had become obsessed with Euronymous and his ideas, and soon a lot of Norwegian death metal bands transformed into black metal bands. Amputation became immortal. Thou Shall Suffer turned into Emperor. Dark Throne swapped their Swedish-inspired death metal for primitive black metal. Most notoriously, Old Funeral's guitar player Varg Vikernes had already left the band to form his own creation, Burzum. One thing to think about when you're trying to picture all this is these were all really young, impressionable kids. Euronymous was a little bit older than some of them, and he had a very strong personality when he turned it on. There are friends of his who have said that in the beginning it was just that, it was a persona, but that towards the end of his life, he actually began to believe the things that he was spewing. Euronymous really seems to have taken his role as the founder of the Norwegian black metal movement to heart, and he was constantly egging other members of the movement on to do things which, of course, naturally he himself would not do. As things progressed within the black metal music scene in Norway, they continued to push this, you know, extreme Satan worshipping imagery, although many of them have since renounced that ideology and have stated that it was kids being kids. There are others who were in the scene who still espouse belief in that ideology, although their beliefs in it are more along the lines of the Anton LaVey brand of Satanism, where it's more of a pretty much do what you want so long as you're not hurting anyone. Through his record label, Deathlike Silence, Euronymous put out the first album by Burzum, which, as I've stated previously, was the sole product of Varg Valkyrenes, or however the hell you say his last name. It was seen as a seminal early Norwegian black metal album. He also joined Mayhem somewhere around this time due to Necro Butchers leaving. And that's one thing a lot of people don't understand about this scene at the time, and it still continues somewhat to this day. The Norwegian black metal scene was very incestuous in that members would jump from one band to another, or you'd have one band that was comprised of members of a bunch of other bands, or somebody'd leave a band, so a member from another group would come and fill in. one of the things that they really espoused was an anti-Christian rhetoric. And this eventually led to church burnings throughout Norway. Now, the first of these was the Fantoft Stave Church. This was on June 6, 1992. These stave churches are mostly built from lumber, so they burn fairly easily. Police eventually came to believe that Varg was actually responsible for the church burning. And he, at times, has admitted to participating, and other times he said he has had nothing to do with it. Although, interestingly enough, the next Burzum piece to be recorded, 1992's Ask, actually features the burned-out church on its cover. These church burnings continued on, with well over 50 churches having been burned down. All of this is going on. The members of the black metal community are involved with this. Some of them would eventually end up getting convicted. The band Mayhem was gearing up to record their first official release, with both Euronymous and Varg recording instrumental tracks for the album. And these church burnings would continue. By 1996, there were at least 50 churches that had been burned. And if you think of what's going on within their scene during this period of time, it's almost like a ceremony of sorts. You've got the death of dead, which starts it. Then these church burnings begin to happen. And in 1992, there was another incident that took place that really built to what I'm going to call the crescendo. On August 21st of 1992, Bard Ethan, known as Faust, who was the drummer for the black metal band Emperor, was visiting his family in Lillehammer. On the night in question, at least according to Faust, he was walking back through the Olympic Park from a bar. And according to numerous sources, the Olympic Park was a well-known cruising spot for homosexuals. A man named Magne Andresen, again, this is according to Faust, approached him and solicited Faust for sex. After a few minutes, Faust agreed to the man's proposition and followed him into the nearby woods, where he proceeded to stab Andresen 37 times before kicking him in the head repeatedly and further brutalizing the body. Over the years, many people have attempted to put this murder as being tied to the black metal scene, seeing members of it as fascists, obviously Satanists, some have said communists, while others have claimed that the early iteration of the scene was filled with racists and homophobes. Faust didn't help his own plight in this particular area, because over the years he gave numerous conflicting stories as to why he did it, ranging from he had been fascinated with serial killers and wanted to see what it was like to take a human life, to it boils down to quote-unquote, I don't give a shit. The end of the day, reality is, I think it was more likely that he was fairly well schnockered from the bar. This guy approached him. Remember, this is the early 90s. in Europe, they did not have as open and accepting a society then as they do now. I personally believe that it was an impulse slash opportunistic killing, in that he obviously was walking around with a lot of anger with him. This guy approaches him, and he sees it as an opportunity to not only get out some of that anger that's inside of him, but also make himself more infamous within the scene. And it's interesting to note that initially police had absolutely no suspects as far as who had done this particular murder. Faust, however, did let it be known to certain members of the community back in Oslo, such as Hieronymus and Varg, that he had committed the act. And he would eventually be arrested for it. In 1994, he was sentenced to 14 years imprisonment, although due to good behavior, he was released early in 2003 after serving 9 years and 4 months, at which point Faust went back into the black and extreme metal scene and continues to this day to provide drums for various bands. I said that this killing was kind of the crescendo, the build-up to the final act of our ritual. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty, the whole point behind this, the story that was asked of me to cover, and that is the death of Hieronymus. During 92... Mayhem had recorded quite a bit of their De Mysterious Dom Satanis with vocalist Attila Silzahar, while Varg had completed the recording of his Ask EP, as well as an entire album known as Detsum Engangvar. Now, in January of that year, this is 1993, Hieronymus and Varg planned to use the recent church burnings, as well as the murder that Faust had committed, to gain some notoriety for the black metal scene. So Varg gave an anonymous interview with a local newspaper, where they claimed to have burnt the churches as well as committed a murder in Lillehammer. Quote, "Our intention is to spread fear and devilry. That is why we are telling this to Bergen's Tynedale," while also claiming that the arsons would continue. They also gave some information to this journalist that had been held back by the police. And prior to publishing the article, the newspaper actually went to the police department to corroborate what they had been told, at which point it was decided to go ahead with the story. So on the morning of January 20th, on the front page of the Bergen Tynedale paper was the headline, "We Lit the Fire," followed by a photograph of Varg with his face mostly concealed by knives. The interesting thing, however, is that Varg and a number of other individuals within the black metal scene were already in police custody when this article came out, with Varg being detained until March. After getting out of jail, Varg was quoted as saying, in regards to the prison system in Norway, "It's much too nice here. It's not hell and all. In this country, prisoners get a bed, toilet, and shower. It's completely ridiculous. I asked the police to throw me in a real dungeon and also encourage them to use violence." There have been numerous reasons given for the article. One of them being that Burzum was just about to release their Ask EP, also that the forthcoming Mayhem album had a church on the cover of it, which the two of them supposedly plotted to blow up. Now, somewhere in between doing the article and getting arrested, some animosity began to build between Varg and Euronymous. So much so that some sources claim the two of them, by that summer, were no longer on speaking terms. Part of this may have had to do with the fact that, as part of the fallout from the initial article which led to the rash of arrest, Euronymous decided to shutter his record shop, claiming that it was drawing too much unwanted police attention. Realistically, it's more likely than not that he was losing money on the venture, as it was a massive building and he only used a very small space inside of it. In any event, on the night of August 10th, 1993, Varg and another musician drove from Bergen to Oslo. Again, there's a lot of things in this story that Varg has shifted around throughout the years. At one point, he was stating that he went over there to collect money owed to him by Euronymous from royalties for record sales. At other points, he has stated, and this is kind of the one he stuck with the last decade or so, that Euronymous had a contract that needed to be signed. So, this part has always made me laugh. According to Varg, he and this other musician by the name of Blackthorn are driving around in Bergen listening to Dead Can Dance albums when they decided, hey, let's go to Oslo and get this out of the way, get this record contract signed, or get the money, whichever of the two is the reality of it. So they arrive at the apartment building, and Blackthorn stays downstairs while Varg goes upstairs to talk with Euronymous. The long and the short of it is, by most accounts, some kind of scuffle broke out between them, and Varg ended up stabbing Euronymous numerous times, eventually chasing him down and stabbing him to death in a stairwell. Years later, Varg would claim that he had gone there ostensibly to sign this contract, but word had gotten back to him that Euronymous was planning on killing him. He stated that other members within the black metal circle, who Euronymous considered to be confidants of his, had been told this and confided in Varg. According to Varg, while Blackthorn stayed downstairs, he went up to the fourth floor with the signed contract in hand, but when Euronymous answered the door, Euronymous panicked and kicked Varg in the chest before fleeing into the apartment to grab a knife, at which point a scuffle broke out and Varg got the upper hand, stabbing Euronymous repeatedly. Fortunately, as it's difficult to get your hands on case files from Norway, the bit of evidence that we do have available to us suggests something much, much different. That possibly Varg was angry over the lack of money that he was getting, and also was probably looking to supplant Euronymous as the big name in the local black metal music scene, and used the contract as a ruse to get into Euronymous's apartment, at which point he attacked and stabbed him to death. One thing you've gotta take away from this that I didn't mention earlier is Varg has been very vocal about this murder, talking about how Euronymous ran from him screaming, quote unquote, like a woman, as Varg viciously stabbed him, eventually cornering him in the stairwell where he stabbed him to death. after the murder, Varg and Blackthorn left, heading back to Bergen, stopping along the way for Varg to dispose of his blood-stained clothes, which either means that he had another set of clothing in the car with him, possibly because he was planning on doing this, or that he drove back home in his underwear. Later, Blackthorn would claim that Varg planned the murder well in advance, and that he being Blackthorn, had almost gone to a mental hospital earlier in the summer and had escaped and gone to live with Varg. He knew that the murder was more likely than not going to take place, but he did not participate in it, as he really didn't care what happened to Euronymous. The police began investigating, although initially they suspected that a Swedish black metal band had participated in the murder, because at this period of time and for years afterwards, there was a very strong war in both ideology and musicianship between Norwegian black metal bands and Swedish black metal bands, similar to what was going on in the United States between the East Coast and West Coast rappers. Varg ended up being arrested on August 19th, so this is 9 days after the murder, in Bergen. What led the police to him? I have no doubt that they probably found his fingerprints all over the house as well as on the murder weapon. They also found 150 kilograms of explosives, which is roughly 330 pounds, along with thousands of rounds of ammunition. Some people have stated that Varg had these things in order to blow up a place called the Blitzhaus, which is an anarchist, communist, and socialist social center in Oslo, Norway. And these individuals who have put forth this idea have stated that Varg actually killed Euronymous because Euronymous was a very vocal communist, and he knew that should he go about doing this or let it be known that he planned on doing this, Euronymous may have attempted to stop him. Not long after Varg was arrested, other members of the black metal scene, including Blackthorn and Faust, were arrested. Faust was arrested because of the murder in Lilyhammer. Blackthorn and other members of the scene, including Samoth of Emperor, were arrested for the church arsons. At trial, it was presented that the murder was premeditated, with both Blackthorn and Varg leaving Bergen to go commit the murder, while a third unnamed individual stayed behind and rented movies and took money out of Varg's account to make it appear as though they had never left. In the end, he was sentenced to 21 years in prison on the 16th of May 1994, which is the maximum amount of prison time under the Norwegian Penal Code. This was for the murder, as well as the arson of three churches, the attempted arson of a fourth church, and the theft and storage of the 330 pounds of explosives. On the day that Varg was sentenced, two other churches in Norway were burned to the ground. Varg served his sentence at various prisons throughout Norway, and while there did his level best to keep his name in print, he decided that he was a neo-Nazi, starting a neo-Nazi organization, released a handful of albums under the Burzum moniker, decided that he wasn't a neo-Nazi, he was actually a pagan. In August of 2003, Varg was transferred to a medium-security prison, which allowed him on the 26th of October to escape. Varg was granted a short leave from the prison, and while outside the prison gates, he carjacked a vehicle, and according to this family, held them at gunpoint. And according to Wikipedia, when the car was eventually found 19 hours later, there were knives, a gas mask, camouflage clothing, a GPS navigator, maps, a compass, a laptop, and a mobile phone. Varg, in a letter to his mother, claimed that he had been given death threats while in prison, and that another inmate had attempted to strangle him, which led him to go on the run. Now, for this escape attempt, Varg had 13 months added to his sentence. In March of 2009, Varg was granted parole, having served almost 15 years. Since that time, Varg has gone on to remain mired in controversy, moving to France, releasing a fascist, neo-pagan, Warhammer-type game, being arrested with further explosives, having all of his social media shut down because of his political ideology, that sort of thing. As for the Norwegian black metal scene, Mayhem eventually released the Die Mysterious, Dom Satanis album, which featured both Euronymous and Varg playing on it, and went on to a fairly lengthy career, which continues to this day. With the death of Euronymous, however, the kind of core of the entire scene, the militaristic outlook given by the majority of the members of the scene began to fall away until eventually it became what it is today, which is all about music, which is, in my opinion, as it should be. Alright, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Deathcast, the first of 2023. Remember, if you enjoy this show, please like and subscribe wherever it is you get your favorite podcasts. Leave a 5-star review and share it on social media. Until next time, the Deathcast is a production of Corpse Creek Publishing. Stay morbid.